Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am the co-host, Jason Snell. With me, as always, your host from The Hollywood Reporter, it's Tim Goodman. Happy New Year, Tim.
Happy New Year, Jason. I feel the bubbly percolating through my nostrils as we speak.
We are standing on the precipice of a new year, so what better time to look back at what's happened over the last year in television. And you constructed earlier this month on The Hollywood Reporter, you constructed some best of lists, because who doesn't like a best of list?
I love them. I seriously do. Yeah. I take it very seriously, as you well know.
I do. And I love them too. I think it's always fun to see what critics think the best and worst of the year are. And best, again, your positivity is keeping you afloat. You are a very positive guy with your best lists. You would never, ever stoop to doing a worst list, would you?
Yes. Maybe. I'm being told I have to do one.
Maybe so. That's difficult for you because I know you are so positive.
I know. My positivity at the end of the year is it takes a lot of people by surprise, because a lot of people get beaten up throughout the year. And then at the end, I'm like, look at all these great shows. I love them. And they're like, what?
They think you don't like stuff, but that's not true. You like stuff.
It's Cartman's mom. What?
So how do we want to do this? Should I just call out the shows and you can talk a little bit about, there's so many of them that maybe I should just shout out the names and you should tell me a little bit about them and we'll just knock them
absolutely
off.
Absolutely. We'll go quickly. Long lists.
Should we go from the top down or should we go bottom up?
Ooh, let's go bottom up.
All right. Just for some suspense. Should we start with broadcast or should we just start with the big list?
I think we should go with the overall, and I'll do a little brief introduction explaining here, because I think that's important.
I agree.
I did a column prior to Postmeets, which is like, okay, people, here's why I don't do a top 10 list. It's archaic. You know, I've said that before. It's outdated modalities.
Yeah, just because we have 10 fingers does not mean we can count only as high as 10. We can count
absolutely
high.
And I think that, and I did tell a story about it, which is a story I told previously on the TV Talk Machine about, you know, having to deal with people who want to kill me, and then finding out from that person that I also made fun of their spouse's show. And you know, it's not fun sometimes to be at these parties and be the person who really just crapped all over somebody's dreams. So, or their hard work or whatever. Although, as I said, if you put yourself into the marketplace of ideas, you're going to get criticized, or you're going to get a positive review. And you're going to make money, and that's how you open yourself up to this stuff. But we're all in agreement about the Queensbury rules when we step into the ring there. But so my piece was like, look, if I have to like really suffer through all this dealing with people whose feelings you've hurt in some way, which it's not a great feeling. I'm not such a bastard. Then I want to celebrate what's great about television at the end of the year, and I'm not going to hold it to 10. And because it's just A, that's a stupid number, and B, the world we live in television-wise in the industry, in this renaissance that we've had, continues. And we have so many great series that this year's list was pretty amazing. We went to 31 on my all-inclusive list. And in this one, I even allowed, you know, if you could bust into this list with a broadcast network show, you were pretty special. But because I have a separate broadcast list, because I do think that they're playing by a different set of rules and they should have a different list. But a few of them crept over and made it.
But this is – I love this, because what you're saying is, if I limited this to 10 – you would be taking away my chance at positivity, and you would be making people angry because I didn't like them enough, which is not the point. The point is to list the stuff that you think is really worthy of honoring, and making it artificially 10 is just going to make number 11 through 31 angry for no reason.
And I also think that, like, you know what? I want to be positive about I want to celebrate the very best in television, because that's you know, it's a lot of really great work's been put into it. Yeah. And so – yeah, absolutely. Let's praise work well done.
It's a sign of a good, creatively strong medium that you have 31 shows that are worthy of honoring. I think that's a great sign.
Yeah.
All right. Should we go through it?
Do it. We'll go quickly and entertain people in the process.
On with a countdown. Up. Count up. Well, the countdown. Yes.
It's a countdown. Yeah.
Yeah. Down from down, but ascending in quality. Anyway.
There you go.
Yeah. Somebody out there can just re-edit this to be in whatever order they like, if they don't like the order we're doing it in. Number 31, Comedy Central, Broad City.
Yeah, love it. Abbi Jacobson and Alana Glazer, they're not only do they break out this year, but that's very funny. It's a, you know, it's a comedy that is pretty audacious and hilarious. Two diverse girls who are out there, girls, women, but they'll call themselves girls as well, are out there. And I think it's just, it's like about pot. It's about slackerism. It's about sex. It's very, very funny. And it's just a different take. You don't see a lot of female driven shows like that. So it was a good, it was good for, and Amy Poehler's executive producer. It was good that Comedy Central put it on there. They, by the way, as an aside, had a great run Comedy Central this year. So.
All right. Number 30, Showtime, Masters of Sex.
Pretty low on the list, you'd have to say, after it came out, a big deal. I think that their quality level was up and down this year. The storyline was a little bit less interesting than it was in the first year because it lacked that novelty. But the writing and the acting, when the writing was on, it was really, really on. And the acting, of course, never faltered. It's amazing that those guys don't get more credit for what they do.
And if you watch it, you might learn something.
You might, exactly.
I don't know. Number 29, here, Refugee from Broadcast Television in its penultimate season, Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it was January of last year when they first came in. And that's the thing about the year-end list. You always, like, what have you done for me lately? What is the big explosive show? But, you know, Parks and Rec had a nice year. It was they added a lot more emotion this year, mm-hmm. I thought, and a little bit more in a way that made it more touching, but also didn't detract from the comedy, because I'm definitely the no hugging, no learning Larry David school of comedy. But you know, I like people on Parks and Recreation.
This felt like a final season, and in fact, you know, essentially it was a final season, and then their actual final season is like a flash forward future season, which is kind of weird. But you know, I felt like they just felt free to make all those emotional beats of like, what if this was the end of our story? And then it's not, but that's what it felt like to me.
No, I thought it was great. And then, and I said, as I said in my piece, that, you know, they just constructed a lot of characters, Pawnee as its own entity, but also just a lot of characters that populated the local government thing that we love so much. You know, I mean, you can never have enough Ron Swanson. And so I'm happy about that.
All right. Number 28, HBO's Olive Kitteridge miniseries.
Yeah, hopefully people will actually. This is a good one to make this comment on it. I think this is a show that not a lot of people saw, so it's one of those things where you can go back and get it if you have HBO Go, especially if you take HBO, you can go hunt that one down.
Oh yeah.
And when it ever gets into the streaming world, if they ever, you know, uncouple it and get it out there, definitely watch it. It's super, super solid. And as I noted, it's kind of. This was definitely the year of miniseries. You and I have sort of drummed that into everybody's head already anyway. But this one to me felt like this is why you have a miniseries. This is a really long, complicated story that you can't tell in an hour or two. And it's about a life. And it's just no more than that. Just go if you want to see really great acting, go watch that.
All right. Nice. I will check that out on HBO mm-hmm. Go. Number 27, FX's Archer.
Hey, it's been five seasons. People take it for granted now.
Still getting it done.
Still getting it done. So good. And the whole Archer Vice conceit was really interesting. And I just think that, you know, this is a series that I certainly sometimes take for granted because it's so brilliantly written and funny and the voice acting is amazing. But I wanted to make sure it got on the list because it's like Simpsons and South Park and things that I end up taking for granted. You know, all the newbies like Bob's Burgers are the ones that get all the attention, which I do love. But, you know, Archer to me is a standalone. It's you got to have it on the list.
All right. Number 26, Showtime, Penny Dreadful.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's my highest rated Showtime series. And it's because, it was a monster mashup. I love the fact that a guy who was a great writer put it all together. And, you know, first season had its ups and downs, but I think that there's a real voice there. And I'd certainly want to see more. It freaks me out too. It's pretty scary and it's original. And I like taking historically, you know, people like Frankenstein and other characters and mashing them together and making one big world out of it. It was really good.
Cool. Number 25 is Girls on HBO.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is that here we are at the end of the season. So everything's going to start again, right? Like Girls starts again and, you know, all the ones that we just said Parks and Recreation, that's going to start again in January. You forget that these came out so long ago, but, hey, look, Girls is a series I really love because, It's one of those things where people talk about it all the time. And I think that they talk about the people's lives outside of the show, and they don't really pay attention to the show enough. So I always try to take Lena Dunham, who I love. I take her personal life and Allison Williams' personal life, all that stuff, and move it out of the way, and just focus on the show. And I think when you do that, it does great work.
All right. The Game on BBC America, number 24. Woohoo!
Spy series set in the 70s. Gotta love that. I think everybody, again, these are the benefit of these lists is that there'll be a lot of shows on here people haven't seen. Definitely go check out The Game. It's Brian Cox. It's such a star-studded cast. But if you like spy stuff, we joked before about the title isn't that great, but it is The Spy Game. So in British Cold War era 1970s, it's very costume drama-y in its own way, but super well-written and intellectually stimulating.
Nice. Number 23. Speaking of stimulating, it's Outlander on Stars.
Yeah, you know, respect for them. They took a really broad. I know the people who buy the books don't call it romance novels, but that's essentially what they are. And it's not a show that looked like it was going to attract men to it. Most the books are mostly. Even the woman who writes it will joke that it's like mostly 50-year-old women who read the books. But it turns out that there is a rip-roaring yarn in there on Outlander. So you put some kilts and some sex and some love and some violence and Scottish clans together, and it had the making of a really surprising, I think, and different series. And I think it's probably going to get better as it goes.
Little spooky magic time travel. Thrown mm-hmm. in too.
Yeah, falling into different times.
What made me kind of interested in it. And we, you know, really enjoyed the whole thing. And I was just sort of like, what's the time travel plot going to be? And that was enough for me to get into it. And then, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. Plus, it's like it's a double period drama, right? Because she's not traveling from our time back in time. She's traveling from post-World War II to back in time. So it's, you know, you get the double. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
There's a lot going on. Yeah, it's really good. It's meaty.
Number 22. Oh, this is your friend Steven Soderbergh. This is The Nick on Cinemax.
Yeah, it's like it's great. There's so much to like about that series. It's really difficult to watch because it's gruesome, but it's unbelievably beautifully shot. No surprise there when you've got somebody like Soderbergh directing every single episode, as he will the next season.
Wow.
And you've got a movie star like Clive Owen anchoring it down. I think there's great stuff about. You know, turn of the century New York medicine, and I love the fact that it's about, you know, there just was not a whole lot of successful medical procedures, and they just did a lot of trial and error. But in that, there's a greater story about the toll, life and death toll it takes on these doctors, and there's race stuff, and there's New York City as a part of a player. It's really a solid series. It's not going to knock your socks off like Game of Thrones, where it's like, oh yay, swordplay and stuff. But it's very, very solid.
All right, 21, Rectify on Sundance.
Yeah, the poster child for slow TV these days. I love it. First season was amazing, right? And the second season I thought was able to tell that story a little bit better or a little more thoroughly. The writing in it is amazing, and the acting is just wow. It's just across the board so strong. It's definitely a little gem. Not a lot of people have sort of followed it, but it's one of the more critically acclaimed series, and certainly deserves to be on a list at 21.
This is the show about the guy who's spent time on death row, unjustly accused, gets freed and goes back home,
and what it's like, right? That's sort of yeah.
Wow.
It's just, and they did a great job of slowing it down and saying, okay, instead of just saying, yeah, he's free, and then the next day life is normal, and he's like living his normal life. That's never how it was going to be. So like, let's go day. You know, the first season was one day. Each episode was a day. So yeah, I think that was six days, and not very much time to spend with the guy. And it moves really slow. I love that they take their time in the storytelling. And if you haven't seen it, now's a good time. You've got two seasons in the bank. A good time to play catch up.
Boy, you're right about Comedy Central killing it. Number 20, Review.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so. Andy Daly is amazing in that. It's the premise again. Like I've said it on our past podcast, is that I didn't review it when it first came out. I didn't review when it came out. And I just thought it was. I just skimmed it, like thinking like, oh, this is some not scripted series. And I thought it was like a guy who was going to just be in front of a camera critiquing things around the world or whatever. And I just didn't pay attention clearly to the fine print that it's a scripted comedy. And it's very funny. Andy Daly plays a guy who he's not a TV critic. He's not a movie critic. He critiques life experiences. What's it like to sleep with a movie star? What's it like to like do a bunch of cocaine? But it's written it, and it's this guy takes his job very seriously. But of course, every time he takes on one of these challenges from somebody who asks him, hey, what's this life? What would this be like in life? It really does damage to his own personal life, but is incredibly, incredibly funny. And usually there's two bits each. If you go on the Comedy Central website, just any clip you can find would be great. A couple of my favorites are what, you know, eating a stack of pancakes and critiquing that is just amazing. There's another one where he misinterprets what someone says, and that turns into a hilarious detour in his life. And really funny stuff.
Okay. And also number 19 is Comedy Central's Key and Peele.
Yeah, they closed strong on that list. Key and Peele, all I said in when I did the list was, while sketch comedy has its own renaissance, this is the masterpiece. Mm. I mean, I just think that there's no getting around it. Those guys are at the top of their game. They're super creative. They take things in different directions. And this was if you're a fan of Key and Peele and you've gone through it, this season was much darker. It's like it's very serious. I mean, funny, but then they took it to the next level. Or we're like, guys, super bleak, very bleak, but very funny. And I appreciated them sort of taking an ambitious creative step in a different direction, because they could have played their old favorites, which I would have loved to seen, you know, Substitute Teacher 10,000 times over. But they definitely broadened it out. Very smart guys and good actors, which is, I think, helps sell it. So definitely, if you've never seen Key and Peele, oh my God, on that. Yeah, get on that.
Absolutely. Number 18, The Missing on Stars.
Yeah, and that's been, I don't know if you've heard, but that's been picked up for a second season. And that was, again, super gutting, like Broadchurch. It's present day, and so it flashes back to 2006 when there was a young boy was kidnapped.
Right. This is the James Nesbitt. Right.
Right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing acting. It's painful and emotional, but just as far as a drama, super solid. That's why it's on my list. Happy that it's come back for second season too.
Number 17, Silicon Valley on HBO.
Yay. We're definitely in accord on this one, right? Yeah. You and I are both big fans of Silicon Valley.
Very funny.
Very funny. I didn't miss a beat the whole time. Just amazing. And as I pointed out in my review, somebody who's covered comedy before, I can tell you that comedians think of the dick joke as the lowest form of comedy. And yet they made two of the greatest dick jokes in two of them, not just one, in maybe the history of comedy. So, but beyond that, skewered the tech world. Very, very great job at that. And I think you and I both said they can do more.
And
they will do more next year. And as you pointed out, when they're going to talk, when they have more of a female perspective, I think they'll do better.
Yeah. And I still think about the guy falling asleep in the self-driving car and getting loaded into the container and being put out to sea and laugh. I still think about that joke.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. Because it had so many levels to it. Not just it just drove him out to the container, but so many levels about electronics. And mm-hmm. It's so good.
He ends up at like a Sealand like place, which is like an oil rig that's declared its own independence and isn't part of any country. And oh, man.
So good.
Number 16, also HBO, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Right? I mean, as I said in my Stephen Colbert send-off, you can be worried about whether the next project that he does is going to be good or not. But look, we were worried about John Oliver, and it turned out that he's pretty great at whatever he does. And my only criticism, which is, constructive, is I would like it to be an hour, not a half an hour.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like he's racing through it all the time. But it's brilliant. He's racing through brilliance. So hard to complain about that. But an hour would be better than a half an hour.
Yeah, it feels like he, you know, he should have time to do a little bit more. The his long segment takedowns are great and are viral and are actually like leading to people discussing issues, which is kind of amazing. And then there's other comedy there, but yeah, it does feel really surprisingly short. And why not? Yeah, why not do 45 minutes? Why
exactly. Not?
Just give him a little more room to breathe because there's a
look
lot.
Look at you with the 45 minute.
Hey, maybe not. It's HBO. They don't care.
They don't care. They'll fill it with the promos of upcoming shows.
That's right. They'll do a they'll do shorts. They'll do like a 10-minute comedy sketch with whatever. It doesn't matter. It's HBO.
Chris Rock.
They don't care what time it is. It's HBO. It's not the
not
clock.
Even TV. Not even TV. It's
no,
HBO.
It's HBO. They don't care about your clocks. Number 15. More from broadcast networks. My favorite comedy on TV, Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Fox.
Yeah, my favorite comedy too. Certainly my favorite broadcast comedy.
Yeah, network comedy, sure.
Yeah, network comedy. And the second of three shows to make this list, Parks was the first from the network. It's funny. I mean, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is even funnier in its second season. Its first season, it felt like it came out fully formed, and we liked those characters immediately.
Yeah.
But even in this second season, as you're watching, you can tell that the deeper characters – the deeper bench is getting more play, and it's just more fun. I always watch that show, and I'm happy when I watch it.
You know, sometimes Parks and Rec gets a knock, and it's basically the same producers, Mike Schur and Dan Gurer on this one. And they are about how about my Mike Schur knowledge there, huh? Hmm?
Very good, very good, solid.
Well, he was Ken Tremendous. He wrote my favorite blog of all time, which was Fire Joe Morgan. So I've been a fan of his since then, and now his shows are good. But the knock on Parks and Rec was always that it was more gentle character comedy than it was jokes. And there's some truth to that, although I think that's not entirely fair. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine has good character stuff in it, but man, it is also a machine gun of jokes.
Oh boy, yeah.
So you know,
so good.
I know they can do that. They can do the machine gun of jokes. Trust me, it's really great. Really great. People should check out Mike Schur. Actually, does a podcast like every month or so with the sports writer Joe Posnanski. It's called The Podcast, and they draft something every month, usually like something random, like awards or intangible concepts. And it's actually a lot of fun because Mike Schur is a really funny guy. So
yeah,
say hi to him at the TV Critics Association.
I will do that. Yes.
Number 14, Veep on HBO.
Yeah. Another comedy coming in. That could very well be my favorite comedy on television, or certainly one of them. Veep is amazing, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's like, Armando Iannucci from The Thick of It brings this comedy to the – now what was that, third season? God, was that second or third? I think it was third season. Third season
third,
in the U.S.
Yeah.
And just so, so funny. Skewering the political system one half hour at a time. And if you haven't caught up on this show, go get it and just get into it as much as you can. It's amazing.
It's definitely in the English TV style where it's a little uncomfortable. Like Thick of It was a little bit uncomfortable, but boy, just so funny. Just like laceratingly funny.
I think you were being generous. The Thick of It was very uncomfortable.
Thick of It was, it was extremely uncomfortable and yet amazingly, like brutally funny, but with Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, so great.
Yeah. Apparently Armando Iannucci and Peter Capaldi grew up together. They're both Italian origin from Scotland. It's kind of random.
See?
Random things that I know. I don't have trivia for all of the top 15, but I have for 15 and 14. Number 13, Jane the Virgin on the CW. This is our top rated network show on this list, correct?
Yes, and also, which will not, no spoilers since I've tweeted out already. It is my number one broadcast show too.
Sure.
So, woohoo! Jane the Virgin. Yeah, I love it. It's to me the feel good story of 2014.
Yeah.
As we close the door on that, and I tip my high end champagne. You know. Just an aside, Jason, you do know that champagne, you can only call it champagne if it comes
from
the region.
France, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be in the region.
I learned that in Wayne's World. Jim Broblo explains that in Wayne's World. That's where I learned that. Classy.
That is very classy. That's scary. Oh, yeah, I didn't know you were going there.
We've talked about Jane the Virgin a lot. It's,
it's great. Just watch it. Like that's at this point, we've talked about it so much, but lots of people still not watching it. Watch it. You'll love it. It feels good.
Number 12. Oh, boy, these are getting good. BBC America, Orphan Black.
Orphan Black, yeah. And here's the thing. I feel proud of the fact that when I did this list, I was like, you know what? I could just do another rant about Tatiana Maslany being brilliant and snubbed at all the award shows. But really, the show itself is great. And the show itself needs to be It needs to get more attention. So go watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Hey, it's about clones, man, and it's awesome. Go see it.
Yeah, but it's not like a totally wacky sci-fi thing. I mean, there's so many funny character moments and all the and it's not a stunt that Tatiana Maslany plays all these different characters. They are all really fleshed out characters. It's not a gimmick show. It really isn't.
No, not a gimmick show at all. You hear my dog in the background taking a toy and beating it around. You always have to have a little family.
It's family. It's New Year's. It's family time. It's the holidays.
I will say this about Orphan Black. If you were to tell somebody and say, hey, it's about clones. Yeah. If you didn't like sci-fi, you'd be like, oh, God, that's going to be dreadful. But it's not at all. That's like nothing like that. Just go watch it. And my thing was that the reason I have it at 12 in this list is because I think it's a great show, not just a great star.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Number 11, The Leftovers on HBO. Ooh, we're going dark. It's dark. From Orphan Black to even blacker. The Leftovers. Blacker.
Yes. Good knowledge there. you know what? I'm a big fan of existentialism, as you well know. And so it's really on display here in The Leftovers. And I loved the first season. I thought there was amazing work in it. I thought there was great acting, despair. But I got to say, there were a couple of scenes that I didn't expect and it just took my breath away. And I wouldn't ruin it for anybody. But boy, man, there's a woman in the show, great actress, Carrie Coon. And she just gets the worst of it, and that show so good. I'm just laughing now that my dog is tearing apart some stuffed animal. Doesn't he know that The Leftovers is not something funny? It's so dark. He shouldn't be tearing up and being cute.
Doesn't he know what they do to dogs on that show?
Yes. Hey, look at your knowledge there. Maybe he's like that.
He just
shows up and growls at me.
Uh-huh. Number 10, The Walking Dead on AMC.
Yes, and I'm just going to read this part because I think that this is important. This sums up what I think about it, and that is, this is the poster series for disrespected genre shows.
Yeah.
I mean, this show is so much more than zombies. So it's that's all I'm going to say. I love it. I wouldn't miss it. It's so compelling. And you and I have talked about compelling shows. Boardwalk Empire, where it could be a great show and then you're just not compelled to watch it. But this is a show that I want to watch the moment it comes on. And I'll sit through the commercials, and that's a rarity.
And this is like the top rated TV show now, right?
it's just on all
networks.
Gangbuster. I mean, maybe NCIS can challenge it some weeks. I'm not paying that much attention to it, but it's just
crazy.
Every time it has an episode, it's like, oh, look how billions of people watched it.
Speaking of compelling, number 9, Game of Thrones on HBO.
Love it. We are in the moment now where we're getting previews, which I'm going to be snippy about because they're snippets. See what I did there? If you're a Game of Thrones fan, don't encourage that. Right now, HBO is like putting out these little 5-second things where you sign up and they send it to your phone. It's such a gimmick. Don't. You're fans of the show. You deserve better. You're better than that, HBO. And fans, you deserve better. Get a real promo. Just sit through a real 1-minute promo like everybody else. Dang it. But Game of Thrones is on the list because it's just, I mean, look, there's nothing more, as I said, more engrossing and epic on all of television. And my only complaint is that it should be 13 episode seasons instead of 10.
Yep. Amen. They got a lot of story. I don't understand. I guess HBO figures why spend money for more episodes when I just don't. I don't get it. It's like your big hit show, and it's got an epic story to tell, and they're having trouble having enough time to tell it all. Give them more time.
And when it gets backed up, we don't want to bog down our list here. But when Game of Thrones gets backed up in its storytelling, that's when it gets bad because all it is like 2 seconds with Arya, 2 seconds here's our 35 characters and
who's that guy?
Seconds. Yeah, exactly right.
Is that guy new? Am I supposed to know who that guy is?
I haven't seen his story in ages.
Number eight. This is your winner of the fall. Transparent from Amazon.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, it's just look at Amazon Studios breaking into the top 10.
Yeah.
Such a great series. Does a lot of stuff that no one else does. A grown-up series with real emotions, but yet always funny and always real. And I'm always happy when I get not that something like Parks and Recreation isn't like grown-up in its own way too, but this is grown-up, adult humor, very, very sentimental and emotional, but also funny.
Number 7, Netflix, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, another streaming service back-to-back there. I actually did not do that on purpose, by the way. It's just how the cards played out.
Yep.
Orange is the New Black, second season, I think, delved a little bit deeper into its characters. I think it was a better season because it was able to flesh out all the smaller characters. But yeah, just still hitting on all cylinders. So if you haven't seen that one yet, which is kind of surprising, but if you haven't seen Orange is the New Black, start now.
No questions about whether it's available to stream.
Right. It's there.
Well, it is on Netflix.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Number 6, Louis from FX.
Yeah, it's funny. The two things about Louis. One, it was a season that was purposefully done to be a little bit more difficult to digest.
Yeah, uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Yeah. Putting your hero, as we say, into positions where he can be unlikable or make decisions that you don't want him to make. They did that on purpose. But the aside that I'll put on for Louis as we just about to head into the top 5, that I think that Louis was a show where it said, look, you can't recap me every week because you're just going to make a fool of yourself. I'm not a big recap fan anyway, but everybody was making knee-jerk judgments about Louis every episode. And then if you just ignored all that and watched it as a whole and saw what he was trying to do, then everything you wrote prior was pointless. So to me, it was like, this is a show that cannot be recapped because it's just too different. And then it's trying things that you can't make snap judgments about. You got to see the whole.
Let's see. We are up to number 5, Sundance
number 5.
TV's The Honorable Woman. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, I was going to – I actually – you know, it ended up 5th, but like – I mean, look, these next 5 shows, I mean, all of them are great, but the next 5 shows, they could have just could have rejiggered the order and I would have been happy either way. I mean, I actually thought about The Honorable Woman as number 1 for a very, very long time. So just – it's really current, especially with Middle East situations, West Bank and Israel, a lot of interesting stuff there, plus a really – really complicated story. So go check that out. And it's self-contained and you can get through it. It's amazing.
Number 4 is Mad Men. Ah, the old classic, it appears. AMC's Mad Men at number 4.
Oh, yeah. You know, if it wasn't the end of the season and I was swamped and we all want to go on our vacations and stuff like that, I would have probably done stop disrespecting Mad Men. I mean, the fact that it doesn't get the second year in a row didn't get a Golden Globe nomination. I mean, we are taking for granted one of the greatest series that has ever been made for television. Like, it's crazy that, you know, that it didn't get nominated. But I just mad respect for Mad Men. But we do take it for granted, even critics. So there it is at number 4, still solid. In only a half a year, 7 episodes, still solid.
Number 3. Oh, this is a great one. HBO. This is the top ranked HBO series, True Detective. Mm-hmm.
True Detective. I mean, how do you beat it? I mean, the ending is not that great, but for me, it was never about the ending. It was never about the story so much as a traditional, like, there were murders and who did it thing. It was the interplay between Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. And I just think the dialogue was amazing and the writing was fantastic and the acting performances were off the charts. So, yeah, it's one of those ones that just, I think it just stuck with me for so long. So that one, great. I know a lot of people don't get HBO. So when we say, I can't believe you haven't seen it, but track it down, find somebody who does get HBO or whatever and go watch it.
Yeah, I told you, I watched this about like a month after it was over. I watched the whole thing in the course of about a week and pulled away from the week by week, like speculation where people get really cranked up about, oh, there's going to be a plot twist and there's a mystery right. And all that. I just tuned that out because I hadn't watched it yet. And by the time I watched it, that was all gone. And I really enjoyed it. And I feel like this is one of those examples where everybody, it gets all zeitgeisty and then everybody's like starts having these unreasonable expectations and they feed off of each other.
Right.
And then they start to imagine a show that is totally not the show that it is and that the story that they want to tell. And for me, just watching it, I was happy to take it as it came and I really enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah, such a great point you just made there, though. I mean, just not even to gloss over that. A lot of times we do, it's like something's great, but you start talking about it in the you know, social media or whatever it is, and you're imagining a show you're not even watching anymore, or you're wanting to be something else, just enjoy the show.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. I mean, so yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, we're in the heady top two now.
The heady twos. Woo!
Number two, The Americans on FX.
Criminally overlooked, as I say. Third season of The Americans was outstanding, and like I loved everything about it. And you know, this is the Soviet era spy, Cold War spy thing in the 80s, set in the 80s. And if you go back, you know, if you're into spies, you can watch The Game from BBC America set in the 70s, 72, I think is what it takes place. And The American set in the Reagan era 80s. I love all those big steel cars driving around Washington, D.C., in Virginia. But yeah, so great acting, great writing, and amazing that it can still tell really fantastic stories this deep into it. But yeah, I'm criminally overlooked, and I did make a point of like True Detective being three, and we're about to come up on number one, and they were both miniseries, and you got to give a little respect to a show that's telling a story every season with the same characters, and it's a continuing storyline. That's a little harder to do than just to make up, you know, even The Honorable Woman. It's one and done. So you have a great idea, it ends, but there is something to be said about the nature of television, ongoing storytelling, how difficult that is to repeat year to year.
And we've reached number one.
Drum roll. You're a really crappy drummer.
I am a terrible drummer. I don't have drums near me. I don't know what to do. How about that?
That was pretty good. That was better.
All right, on the microphone. It's again from FX. It's Fargo.
Yes, Fargo. I mean, that's, again, FX taking the one and the two slots. But Fargo, to me, was, there was no reason that should have been remade or reimagined. It was on paper, and as soon as anybody heard about it, like the dumbest idea you could ever imagine. Why would you take such a calculated risk that it's going to be a disaster? And then you think, okay, this is why we have smart people in television, like the guys who run FX, who saw that the script and the idea were brilliant, and you put it in good hands. And all through the list, Billy Bob Thornton, Martin Freeman, Allison Tolman, who I love. Hopefully she'll get in something else great. And Colin Hanks all delivered incredible performances. But the writing from Noah Hawley, who created it, was amazing. And the Coen brothers, who didn't have to sign off on it, they were just going to get a check for using the name, totally signed off on it, became executive producers because it was that good. And now it's an anthology. It went 10 brilliant episodes, and now it'll come back with a different cast, much like True Detective. And be, quote, an anthology series next season.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had some friends of mine who watched it and said they hated it.
What?
I know. But now you've got me thinking. I'm going to have to go back to it now.
Oh, Jason. Like, if I knew this fact, then I conveniently forgot it out of spite.
Yeah, so I think you blocked it out.
I must have blocked it out because I just cannot believe you have not watched Fargo. And now it's number one on my list. You have to.
I know. I'm compelled to now, aren't I?
You were compelled to.
That's okay.
Friend. Wow. Number one. That's enough, right? That's got to be enough.
That's pretty good time for FX, right? Three out of the top six.
Absolutely. And let me ask you something quickly about that, because, you know, I did a whole, like I said, I did a whole thing about having a very long list, 31 shows. I mean, you look at that list, there's not a bad show on there. And it, you know, you might say, oh, yeah, hey, not everybody knows Penny Dreadful or something like that. But there's not a show on that list that I would take off. Not one that I was embarrassed about to put on there, but at all. But I just thought, like, man, hey, great year for television. Let's applaud those who did a really fantastic job of it.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, why not spread the love around? If you've got that, if you've got so much love to give that you can give love to 31 shows, you should give love to 31 shows.
Wow, I could really riff on that, but you I'm could. Not. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying, I do have a lot of love. I'm a lovable guy.
Well, and in fact, you've got 45 shows that you love, because your top network shows list was 17 long, only three of which made the big list. So
So there's an additional 14 that no one's heard about. You know, we should go through it. We'll go through those quicker.
Right.
And I think we should start at one, because I think people know these shows
right.
more.
Okay.
It's just an assumption that, I mean, it's not true that more people watch network than television or than cable, but it is true that some people are certainly under financial duress for than other people, and they're like, you know, we can't afford to have HBO or Showtime or Stars. You know, or
the Sundance channel. I don't even know if I get the Sundance channel.
Exactly. Right. See? So, you know, they don't get that. Where they will recognize these shows, and we'll go quickly and we'll go, let's start with number one. Let's do that.
All right. We know
what it is.
Here we go. Number one, Jane the Virgin.
Great. Right? We've already talked about it. Go watch it, damn it. It's on the CW.
Number
people.
Two, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Fox.
That was our second one that made it.
Amazing.
Woo!
Now you cheated a little bit. You dropped something in there that's not on the big list. It's number three. It's our good old friend Ken Burns with the Roosevelts.
I did cheat because you could say, hey, wait, because Parks and Recreation is four, and that's how they were backed on the list. Parks and Recreation, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and the top one was Jane the Virgin. Where was Roosevelts, Goodman? What'd you do there? Trickery. Yeah, I know. It's a year-end list, and those things happen. But yeah, the Roosevelts, eat your vegetables. It's not something you have to sit through and think, oh, this is boring. It is fascinating. Ken Burns was like, you know what? Hey, let's take all three Roosevelts and put them together and tell their stories in an intertwined fashion rather than separately. And I think that, to me, was what made it interesting. But also, it's just like you think you know about people until Ken Burns actually does a little background and you're like, oh, right. I did not know that. And that is fascinating. So I know for some people, a documentary is dry. This one is not. You should definitely watch the Roosevelts. Yay, PBS.
Yay, PBS. Number four, back to the list, Parks and Rec. NBC.
Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson, Jerry, Leslie Knope. Woohoo. Okay, we already talked about that.
One more season.
One more season. One and done. And good for those people.
Number five, The Good Wife, CBS.
Which, Jason, what did we say last two or three podcasts ago?
I don't know. It's
not a great wife. She's a good wife.
It's good. It's fine.
It's not called the great wife. It's the good wife. It's number five on my list. People are like, oh, if you're going to do a broadcast one, that should be number one. No. Hey, we all have our opinions. I think it's done very well. Certainly the acting is great, but you know, I would say to everybody who thinks that The Good Wife is the best show in the whole world and should be up there with all the cable shows. Really? Because it's a lot of episodes, and at some point you can really see the strain in the writer's room. It gets a little bit ridiculous. There you go.
Number six, The Flash.
Well, we don't really have to say much about that because that's our good friend, The Flash.
Yes.
All I noted was that it was also a feel-good story, and I made my list because not only is it a story that fits the CW, it's fun as you learn about this character and as The Flash becomes The Flash and gets confident. It's really interesting. But it also was like, it really was a building block that helped up the CW. So, and it also fits well with the Arrow and everything else that's going on in that network. So I felt good about that.
Yep. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. Number seven, The Goldbergs on ABC.
Do you watch The Goldbergs?
I have never seen The Goldbergs. I know it's Adam Goldberg. It's like the story of his life. It's like the 80s in...
It is so the 80s, and I love the fact that they're not specific about the date. It's just 80-something. It's like a mishmash of 80s memories, so it's just great. This is actually how I would do it. Like, I don't know, was that 82? And you don't have the people say, oh, you know, they didn't have that car or that song in 80. So it's less specific. It's just about the 80s. It's really super funny. I wish more people watched it. But look, you didn't even watch Fargo, so I'm not going to get on you for not watching the Goldbergs.
Right, fair enough.
But watch it, people.
I didn't have any friends tell me The Goldbergs was bad, though. So
okay, good.
Number eight. Oh, this is a good one. Bob's Burgers, Fox.
I know you watch that.
I do.
Yes.
That's so a funny, funny show.
God, it's just like, I know, right? It's like the more I watch it, the more I want to hear that voice cast. If you can tolerate this, I will say to fans of Bob's Burgers, if you just Google Oh My God and Bob's Burgers, somebody did a super tape.
Oh, it's a super cut of all the Oh My Gods from Bob's Burgers.
Right, yeah, but only from Bob. So it's so good.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I could almost not take it because it's like two minutes. But I was just tearing up as I was listening to it.
Yeah, when you're done with that, then watch the super cut of everybody in the Star Trek The Next Generation saying mean things to Lieutenant Worf. It made me cry with laughter because they are so mean to that poor guy just because he's a Klingon. So mean. So mean. Never mind, Worf. Forget it, Worf. Quiet, Worf. Oh. And he's just sad. A little tear.
Well, I think that's funny. I'll watch that now.
Number nine, Elementary. CBS.
Yes. Were you surprised by that?
No, we've talked about that a little bit. That's a, yeah. This is what, again, in the competent CBS procedurals, just because they're you know, there are so many of them and they're so competent doesn't mean that they're not good and watchable. Yeah.
Exactly. And Johnny Lee Miller, fantastic.
Johnny Lee Miller, yeah.
Fantastic. It just inhabits the role and is fantastic in it. And Lucy Liu, great too. What is it, three seasons? Or God, is my maybe, yeah, I think it's the third season now. I love the fact that they have not and are not, and not in any particular – it's not going to happen. They're not hooking up. So that was good. That's a, that would have ruined the show. So yeah. As Watson. So, very good. Very, I love Elementary. It's one of my go-to feel good, shows.
Well, comfort viewing,
comfort viewing,
comfortable in the comfortable arms of CBS. Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Number, wow. By the way,
yeah,
there is no network better at congratulating itself in the guise of wishing somebody a happy holidays than CBS.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you see all those promos they show, uh-huh, like during the football games where it's, yeah, like, thank you for making us the best network ever. Thank you for giving us all of this success and cash because we're awesome. Because of you, thank you. That's why we're so great. It's like, boy, you know, CBS. Pat, don't strain yourself when you're patting yourself on, yeah, the back there, CBS.
Don't pull a muscle doing that.
Yeah. Nonetheless, Moonves, he is a master. Number 10, Hannibal, NBC.
Yeah, I almost, I don't regret it. It's beautifully done, and it's kind of, it's in some ways, it's almost like a cable series that snuck on to broadcast. I share this feeling with it. A lot of my peers feel is like we're all kind of fellow critics are like, really? I can't believe that NBC really put this on the air. It is kind of gruesome. He is eating everybody. Yeah. But I will say the thing that my caveat is that I appreciate it, but I don't like watching it. Mm. So that's the downside of that.
It's your uncomfortable pick right after
it was
your
my
comfort
uncomfortable pick.
Pick
right after my very comfortable Elementary pick. Yeah,
let's go back to the comforts of CBS with Person of Interest.
Yes, I've loved Person of Interest from the get go, from the jump, and you know, it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I think it's kind of not sci-fi-ish, but it's kind of cutting edge. It is. Computers.
It is. Yeah. I think there's a strong argument to be made that it is as sci-fi a show as CBS will allow itself to make these days. But
that is,
it's got. I mean, there's sci-fi. The machine and all of that is totally a sci-fi, mm-hmm, premise.
Yeah.
Inside that procedural.
Inside the mind
thing.
Of this thing that can see everything. Yeah. You know, solid writing. Super competent,
cast.
As we say. Yeah. Yeah, interesting cast, super competent. You know, it's like, God, yeah, you're like, when it's done, you're like, yeah, CBS, well done. You've made a really solid car here.
Yes.
You know? So I'm proud of them.
I think I will take it.
Yeah.
Number 12, The Blacklist, NBC.
Cool. Yeah, it didn't have the greatest, you know, it's only gone half of its season. Not as good as the first season, but James Spader is still brilliant. He's the whole reason to watch anyway, so I'll watch him do anything.
Yeah, you can't over-Spader it too much, but
you beat me to it. You cannot over-Spader it.
No. The number 13, Black-ish. We talked about this a lot on ABC. Very funny.
Very funny. It's a great, it's got a comedy with a point of view. It's diverse, funny, and unexpected is what I would say.
And it's new.
I loved it.
It's new. It's got new. A little more energy than, for example, number 14, Modern Family on ABC.
And, as my dog tears apart another toy I want in the background, he's mad that I put Modern Family on the list. And I understand that because he's like, wait, every time you talk about Modern Family, you're talking about it getting too many Emmys. But right. I don't want the impression to be that I think it's a bad show. It's a funny show. I just don't think it should win the Emmys 6 years in a row.
Right.
So it still makes really good shows. It's still really funny. I think a little bit of the conceit of the mixed families and stuff is lost now. But hey, look, it's only a half an hour, and in those 22 minutes, there's a lot of really good jokes.
Tim, don't look now, but you've got like 3 live-action Fox sitcoms on this list. That's crazy, because at 15 and 16 are Mindy Project and New Girl.
Yeah, and they're always kind of lumped together and always will be. You know, they're struggling along. They don't get great ratings, but they're, you know, they're funny. I think that there's the stuff that comes out of the mouth, so the people on New Girl is you know, you could go 20 minutes and find it moderately funny, and then somebody will say something crazy, and you're like, yeah, that's a slogan that everybody was saying on social media soon. But at 15, right before it, Mindy Project, it's funny. You know, it's a rom com that still manages to not be sugary sweet and still makes me laugh. And I think you got to have room for something like that, and certainly better than About a Boy. In my way, if you're, and I think Mindy's great too, so I like to have that.
All right, that brings us to the end, teetering, as we've talked about for on this show, teetering on the brink of not being on a list, but it just, it's holding on by its fingernails. It's Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, and you know what? This is funny. Well, you and I, because we talk about Sleepy Hollow a lot for the number 17th ranked show on the broadcast, which didn't even make the top 31.
It would have been higher, like, in the first season of it, but now
not
so
much. Been higher. But I will say this, though, and I think this is, this in some ways, I was thinking about this the other day, by the way, in some ways, Sleepy Hollow is, to me, what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is to you.
You just can't quit it.
You can't quit it. And I was like, look, I got to have this story. I got to have this show on the list. I'll put my qualifiers in there. In fact, the first sentence is, quote, I fear that if this second season continues apace, this series won't be here next year.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll get better. But and they've had their fall finale. But I will say this about Sleepy Hollow. It had to be on the list because I just can't quit it. I'm watching it every week. And part of that is because Nicole Beharie and Tom Meeson are so great.
Yeah,
and
just great.
Linda Greenwood and Orlando Jones and – I won't say what happens to one of those two or four, but look, the main two with Nicole Beharie and Tom Meeson is they're great. They're great together, and I still when they get it right, they get it right. Like there was the episode where Ichabod Tom Meeson was and they're riding on a motorcycle, right? And it's in the middle of like a chase scene. They've got to go get more monsters, and he gets off and he turns around and he's like. Look, and he waves his finger at them. He goes, "I when this is all over, I really, really want one of these." That's what the show.
Yeah,
because he's never had a motor. They've never been on a motorcycle before, and loved it. And it's like that's the moment you want to have. Ichabod's come back 200 years. He just rode a motorcycle, and he's wigging out. How awesome
it is! It's way better than those horses that he rode.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's I love that moment. Mm-hmm. So I'm more of that and less of whatever. Less random. Surfer boy, we want to get into
random extraneous characters. Well, that's it. We have just polished off like 45 TV shows that we think that you think are good, and then I just sit here and nod and go yep.
That was a lot of them.
That's a lot of shows.
And props to the people for listening as we went through it, but there is a lot on there I think that they haven't and I'm sure you'll link to them.
Absolutely.
But there's a lot on there that I think the people have not seen, and certainly as we transition into 2015, it's a good time to go revisit some of those and prep for upcoming seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. There's even if you're in a lull and your shows are not currently on, there's good stuff out there that you can seek out.
Really, you can never go wrong. I mean, in the holiday spirits, you and I have joked about this before. Can we just get a little bit of a break? Can there not be TV all the time? But the good part is there is TV all the time, and there's really great TV to be found if you just look around for it. So you're awesome.
So speaking of never any break, you're going to the Winter Press Tour now, right? That's happening soon.
Yes. I'm packing my bags, my friend, heading down to Los Angeles to be down there for, I don't know, what, 15, 16 nights?
Oh, my God.
Ooh.
So are we going to manage to find some, at least a little time for you to check in from down there to just give us the lay of the land while you're down in L.A.?
Yes, I think we should because now that everybody just endured us doing 177 best shows on television list, what this is about at the Winter TCA Winter Press Tour, Critics Press Tour, is that we're talking about shows that are coming out in January and running through the summer. So basically, what you're about to put your feet in as we go into 2015, and then take you all the way through the summer. So I'll be able to give you like advanced. Word on stuff. In fact, I'm getting a lot of screeners right now for stuff that's coming up that people would be amazed that they're. I mean, I've got Orphan Black now, but there's also like a lot of new shows on HBO and stuff, and I'll see those first, or we as critics will see those first, so I can report from Los Angeles via my microphone and,
nice.
and your twiddling of the knobs, and we'll update people.
We'll make it work.
Yep.
All right. So we close the book on 2014, and then it's onward. To Los Angeles and 2015 TV. Tim, it's been a pleasure doing these first 15 with you, and now that we've done 15, off to 2015. How about that? Huh?
Oh,
that was totally coincidental. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, it was good. It was more humor like that in the new year, my friend.
Okay, I'll work on it. I'm going to workshop some stuff while we're on a break here. So we'll see everybody next week. Tim will be in LA. We will catch up with him there. Tim, it's been a pleasure. Thank you as always.
All right, Jason. Thank you, and we'll see you soon.